The Irish Rural Link is the national network representing the interest of rural communities, established in 1991. Since then, enormous change has taken place in rural Ireland. There have been many challenges for rural communities, and many of these still remain today. We continue to witness the closure of essential rural services, loss of jobs, a declining and ageing population, and migration of young people to take up better quality job opportunities in cities and larger urban centres. However, there have also been some positive changes in more recent years. The development of remote working and digital hubs and the rollout of high-speed broadband can help make rural areas a place where people can work close to where they live and allow people to become more involved and play a larger role in their rural community. At their 30th anniversary celebration conference, there were several discussions with a host of speakers, both Irish Rural Link members and special guests, all headed up by moderator Kieran Mullooly.
Today is a day for celebration, reflection on Irish rural past, and I suppose curiosity about the future too, because at the end of the day, we're looking back on three decades. Three-decade period when we saw some of the most radical, revolutionary of changes in our rural life. An era of great change and modernisation. The introduction of new IT that transformed our lives. The development of new infrastructure that ensured some things will never be the same again. And in human terms, I suppose, our children said goodbye to things, didn't they? They said goodbye to mucky fields and schoolyards and chalk and welcomed in an era of astro pitches, 3G and whiteboards. Remember them? We said goodbye to the traffic jams outside Harry's and Kinnegad. Do you remember them? And we flew out at Knock instead to see our cousins in Luton every weekend. We changed our shirts and jerseys in solar-powered spas instead of porta-cabins and back seats of four transit vans at the side of the pitch. And we finally pushed that, do you remember, I had one on here, that monstrous Amstrad computer off under the desk, and we used our Apple or our tablet instead to help debate with somebody not in the room, but on the other side of the world. We stopped pushing button A and button B, and we focused instead on VoIP instead. And of course, even though it wasn't always changed for the better, we stood up and enjoyed ourselves a wee bit more, didn't we? We saw discos turn into nightclubs, and then back again. We put away the flask and the sandwiches from the side of the road. We ate more fast food from something called the Plaza. We turned to air. To water. We turned to air to water, didn't we? Or water to water instead of 10 loads of turf every year. We insulated ourselves from the winds of change and watched some turbines appear, where occasionally we never thought they would be. And suddenly, three decades were gone. Some said, the more things change, the more things stay the same. But today, we celebrate the reign of Irish rural life with a look back and indeed a look forward to the future.
As Kieran Mullooly alluded to in his opening speech, the start of the conference started with a look back over the past 30 years. The first speaker, Seamus Boland, CEO of the Irish Rural Link, touched on why the Irish Rural Link was created and what it was set up to achieve.
The Irish Rural Link was founded back in 91. We're technically almost 31 years, but let's enjoy that as well. I think the idea was there was something missing. There was something not there. Yes, the very good IFA and ICMSA and all the agricultural organisations were doing a fine job. They were representing their farmers and they were representing the industry of agriculture and farming. But there was still something missing. Founders here like Dermot Levy and John Joe Dunn, Carmel Fox, who couldn't be here, and many others, were setting up small organisations in their own towns and villages because they were living in their own areas and they noticed that people were flying out of them, getting out of them, moving out. The idea was get to secondary school. If you're lucky, get a leaving cert. But even if you're not, you're still going. And that was kind of the ambition. And people like the founders of Irish Rural Link, the founders of so many small communities around the country, made a decision, okay, can we do something ourselves? Can we attract enterprise? Can we attract finance? Can we attract services? Can we create jobs? And can we finally give a choice to people who would like to actually live in their own area? And I think the founders of IRL, when they sat about that and set the organization sort of, as all organizations do, at the beginning in letter frac, it was a journey that we all began on. So Irish Rural Link It is a voice, not the voice, and it never will be the voice. It is a voice representing rural communities in rural Ireland. That's what it does, that's what it seeks to do. And it wants to bring in to that umbrella so many voices, sometimes opposing voices, sometimes voices in agreement, to try and cover the vast spectrum of life in rural Ireland.
Seamus Boland has been a member of the Irish Rural Link since they started back in 1991 and became CEO in 2001. After his speech on the main stage, we managed to have a quick chat with Seamus to find out some of what his proudest moments were throughout his time with the Irish Rural Link.
One of the proudest things for me was we said back in 2007 that broadband in rural areas could only be properly managed if it was brought to every single house in the country. And the laughter that accompanied our statement then was quite incredible. The economists all said we were mad. Everybody did. And I suppose the proudest moment has been the eventual acceptance by policy makers that this is the way forward for broadband. And that's one of the big ones. The other one was another thing I mentioned. We had a very large protest of bus passengers in a then piloted local link program in outside Doyle Éireann. And those passengers spoke about the value of this service. And 2 days later, it was re-established and reinstated. So those are moments that are very proud. But the overall pride is really in that we have, not just me, we have created an organisation that represents the wider rural community, which was missing.
The national broadband plan within the Irish Rural Link has been an ongoing one for quite some time and has been a real goal for them. Although they are still working towards a nationwide rollout, there has been some wins for them too. To find out more, I talked to Maria Pittet, who has been the office manager of the Irish Rural Link for the last 20 years, and training coordinator Mary Keyes Cornally, who has headed up the Getting Citizens Online project.
The National Broadband Plan has been on our radar since, I suppose, 2008. We actually had a national campaign at the time. It was a postcard campaign. We launched at our annual conference in Cork, and we sent out 10,000 postcards and had our members and rural communities actually sign the postcard and send it in to the minister. So that was a very effective, although we're still waiting for that full rollout of the broadband. It's definitely needed, because in the deepest of rural communities, and you know, there's no access to broadband, and people are crying out for it. If they're going to live in villages, they have to have all the services that the towns and villages have, you know, the towns and the cities have. So in fairness, you know, every corner of the country needs to have 5G. So that people can live their lives, you know, without those type of barriers, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. And Mary can talk about her Getting Citizens Online project, because it ties into the broadband and COVID.
Yeah. We do the Getting Citizens Online on the IT skills for farmers. We do the training in the most rural of isolated areas. During COVID, classes were put online, so it was quite challenging, especially for farmers as well. So we really needed strong broadband in every country, county in Ireland. So we continue to do that. We still have blended learning. It's something we would never have done before. So I suppose we would do the training. We would even go to the islands and do the training as well. We would run these classes for people that are unemployed, people with disability. It's really open to anybody that would like to do the training. There's no criteria, you know, to come on this training course. You'll set up an email, you'll do basic online banking. The farmers then will, register online. You know, they will print out their compliance certs and just really get used to, familiar with using the internet, really, farmers. Like if people come into our classes that are the start from maybe 45 years of age up to, we had our oldest participant was 93 years of age. And it's just phenomenal to just see these people coming in and do the training. So it is, you know, for people that have never used a computer before, they'll do it for 5 weeks. Just to see the empowerment in them and look at the confidence grow in them as well is just brilliant.
I suppose the challenges during COVID then.
Yeah, the challenges during COVID then as well. Look at with people, we had a buddy system, we set up a buddy system and we reached over 250 people. This was for people that were cocooning and that were at home. So it was really putting people in touch with family members across the water. People in nursing homes, you know, got to Zoom other people and friends in nursing homes as well. And just keeping in touch with people within the community. They set it up, knitting classes, you know, bingo mornings, coffee mornings, and it kept people going in the community, so it did. So we're very happy with that. And we're continuing to support people now. We haven't left them behind. It's just something that started, you know, and it's continuing to grow, so it is. And I suppose to date, we have trained, I think, over 8,500 participants nationally with the Getting Citizens Online programme.
As much as the Irish Rural Link conference was a celebration of the last 30 years, it was also an outlet for change, with future changes and projects at the forefront of many of the speeches, especially that of the conference's opening speaker, Minister for Rural and Community Development, Heather Humphreys.
I do believe that this is truly an exciting time for rural Ireland. And I think the theme of today's event, looking back at the past 30 years and also looking forward to the future, is particularly appropriate. I am extremely optimistic about what the future holds. I believe that we're living in a time of transformational potential for rural Ireland, a time when we both have the capacity and the desire to make a real difference in the quality of life for those living in rural communities. And I've been honoured to lead the department for almost 2 years now, and last year I was delighted to launch Our Rural Future, which is the most ambitious rural development policy to date in this country. Moving into our post-pandemic future, the reopening of society provides the opportunities to reimagine what rural Ireland can be and to bring about a recovery that benefits all parts of the country. We have published the new regional enterprise plans. New technological universities are being established in the west and the southeast of the country, and a new €50 million fund to improve wastewater services in rural communities has recently been announced. We continue to grow and expand our national network of remote working hubs, connected hubs, and already over 230 hubs are on the network, and we are on course to meet our target of 400 hubs countrywide, which is well ahead of 2025. We have published a new Town Centre First policy, which is designed to tackle the scourge of dereliction in our rural towns and villages, and at a time when the housing need in this country has never been greater. We need to put a non-relenting focus on bringing vacant properties in our towns and villages back into use, because bringing people into our towns will revitalise them.
This part of the Minister's speech was one that sparked more questions to be asked and was a running theme throughout the conference due to the overwhelming amount of derelict properties within rural Ireland, a lack of places to live and a rise in living costs. Luckily, we caught up with Heather Humphreys after her speech to see if she could shed more light onto what the initiative entailed.
There's many exciting things happening in rural Ireland, and of course we still have towns in Ireland where we see vacant properties, and there are opportunities to transform those into modern day houses. What I'm doing is, and as Minister O'Brien will be announcing along with myself, a fund called Croí Cónaithe, and it will be to support people who want to move back into centre of towns. It'll be targeted at first-time buyers, so maybe they would consider choosing a centre of town property as their first home, because you know now we can do fantastic things with old buildings, and that will be announced very, very shortly, but that's coming now, and I think that will help address some of the dereliction in towns. I'm also looking at the Rural Regeneration Fund, which we have used so many times to repurpose old buildings. We have seen old dereliction derelict cinemas, we have seen old derelict banks, we have seen old railway stations, and we have used the Rural Regeneration Fund to help local authorities to renovate them and transform them into 21st century use buildings. And I'm also looking at developing another scheme within my department to identify and to help communities and local authorities purchase maybe old banks. They've done it in Limerick recently, where they purchased three old banks to turn them into remote working hubs and community facilities. So there's loads of opportunities out there, and we want to make sure that we grasp every opportunity and turn it into a reality.
To finish her speech, the Minister wanted to celebrate how far rural Ireland has come over the last 30 years and within COVID. She also reinforced the importance of the Our Rural Future Development Policy and the important part the Irish Rural Link had in the upholding of the policy.
I think it's important to acknowledge today the importance of the dialogue and engagement to the success of Our Rural Future. The policy was informed by extensive consultation with stakeholders and the public, and we are very grateful to receive the valuable contributions of Irish Rural Link in the development of the policy. As an organisation, Irish Rural Link has always been a champion when it comes to issues affecting rural Ireland and is a key partner for my department. And as we move forward in implementing Our Rural Future, it is important now that we do not shut up shop in terms of our engagement with stakeholders. Our Rural Future is intended to be a living document that evolves over time. So we will continue to engage with the people and the organisations working in rural areas as we implement this policy. We know that circumstances change over time, and we're determined to respond to those changes. So just look at all the changes we have had since COVID came here. We've had to think outside the box, and we need to change. So we need to keep changing our rural future as the environment in which we live in changes. So we know that, as I said, we know that things change, and we need to respond to those changes. And you know, I think we never saw as much, and we found such a new appreciation for those of us living in rural areas of what we had on our doorstep. There really is, you know, we discovered things we didn't know we had. So when we were restricted to the 5 kilometre travel, those of us who live in rural areas, we were fortunate to have the fields, the bogs, the forests and the walkways that some of us didn't know were there. So if you wanted to go for a nice walk, we could step out our front door in rural Ireland. People in the cities didn't have that. And I think it caused a lot to reflect on what really is important in life. Remote working has seen more young people and families making the move back to their communities. There's a better quality of life in rural Ireland, and people want to grasp it. The tired narrative of rural Ireland is dying, and I don't want to hear that. It is not dying. We have flipped that on its head, and it is not coming back. Rural Ireland is alive, and it's kicking in communities across this country. And yes, there are challenges, and there always will be challenges, but it's by working together, listening and engaging through forums like this that we will overcome those challenges and make our rural communities stronger and vibrant places to live, work and raise a family. And when I think of rural communities, I think of the tidy towns, I think of the community council, I think of the development association and all those people that are working on the ground. And can I just say on behalf of government, thank you. And thank you to those that help to empower communities, that give them the advice they need and sit down and help them fill up those forms. Because in government, we could not do our work without all of you working to help us do and achieve what we want for rural Ireland.
Since 1991, the Irish Rural Link have worked alongside the government, pushing rural Ireland forward in lots of different projects. But it's believed by some of the members that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done by the government and themselves. Here's founding member Ivan McPhillips.
There are still issues in rural Ireland, like the closure of rural post offices. Mm. I would be making a case, and I've been doing research on this issue, is that we should have community-owned post offices, for example. They've done it in the UK. There's over 500 community-owned post offices in the United Kingdom. Why can we not look at doing something similar? Because when a post office closes in rural Ireland, it's a death knell for that community, and it disheartens the community, both young and old alike. And the implications of the closure of that post office is huge. For example, in the health service, I've been talking to doctors recently, and the doctors tell me openly and honestly that when they see a post office closing, for example, like Capitagal, for example, they said, we are dealing with the consequences, because people they lose faith in the rural communities. They've no social outlet, for example, to actually meet, you know, on a Friday, for example, when they collect the pension. We need to start thinking outside the box and look at supporting the development and of more post offices. The other thing we could do as well, and there's the government have a very, very successful program, again, under the auspices of the minister, and that's the Community Services Program, the CSP program, which I've seen at first hand, which has been a phenomenal success. And I would be urging the government to start looking at allowing community to come forward with initiatives. The minister and the government cannot solve all the problems for rural Ireland. We've got to do it ourselves. We need to do a bit of joined-up thinking, and we need to change the mindset in the Department of Public Expenditure to lift the lid and to allow more investment in the CSP programme and in LEADER as well.
Within the Irish Rural Link Conference, lecturer in Environment and Planning and Irish Independent columnist Conor Skehan opened up a panel speech with a different look at the rural community, looking at the rural population, connectivity and some areas that he believes could be problems going forward and need looking at in the coming years.
One of the unsung victories, if you want to call it that, since 1991 was putting in place both our motorway system and our national primary system. And we now live in a connected country where there are the opportunities for the majority of the number of people, but not the majority of areas, to be able to be readily connected to international airports. And the map in the middle there shows the distance and the level of service that people have, both to motorway access and to an international airport. The theme I will end with when I'm doing my, if it were up to me, is I will draw attention to things that are unfinished business. So while I'm praising the connectivity, I'm praising the opportunities that have been created, I'm also admitting and drawing your attention to the fact that this is unfinished business. The connectivity is a very important one. When I take my students on their rural planning seminar, we go away for a week, and recently we had to finish just outside Ennis, and one of the students pretty inconsiderately announced that she had to be in Dublin Airport for a particular flight, which she hadn't told any of us about. And from the outskirts of Ennis to the entrance to Dublin Airport, we met a single traffic light. One traffic light. That was pretty impressive. Driver turned south, went under the tunnel and came back up. And we're living in an extraordinary country now where those kinds of things that were huge half-day trips are now 2 hours. So the two-hour rule for where most of us can get to most of the time are one of the most important things in terms of access to equality of opportunity. Not complete equality, but equality of opportunity. So I think that one of those things it's done is it's changed and shrunk our perception of what's the edge and what's the middle. And it is one of the big unsung and underappreciated achievements. Now, somebody said to me, and the founder of Supermax wouldn't be a million miles away from me here, that all roads go both ways. And the road is as likely to take your customer down to the outskirts of Dublin to buy their white goods as they are to bring them into your city or town to buy their fridge there. So it's a double-edged sword, and we are seeing it, for instance, in places like Clare. We do a lot of work on tourism with Fáilte Ireland, and the typical trip to the Cliffs of Moher now is a day trip from a Dublin hotel. People get in the bus in the morning, they're gone in the evening. So a lot of our fundamental understandings about what we're trying to do with things like tourism, for instance, have been turned on their head. And bringing more and more tourists to the west of Ireland is not going to bring more and more overnight stays, is not going to bring more and more expenditure to those areas, because the very thing, the gift that gives, the motorway also takes away. So there's a whole lot of new perceptions, a lot of new realities that have to be taken on board and have become part of our thinking. There are, and always will be, unfinished business of things that we need to do, which is to define the different rurals and to have clear, accurate, realistic policies and implementation plans for the different types of rural Ireland that we have. I think we need to have very clear models for each of those as to what we mean by rural services and an integrated delivery of rural services by the full suite of government agencies, but that extraordinary need for high coordination that only exists in rural areas, be they peripheral or central, that has got to be recognised. And then you can see me beginning to differentiate out into what I would regard as the peripherals and the working countrysides. In a lot of my work, I do plans for counties. I do landscape character assessments, county development plans. And one of the most useful things I have found to do is to take the countryside and break it brutally into those two simplistic combinations, a heritage countryside and a working countryside. And a working countryside is where there's an assumption that people are going to live their lives, build their houses, develop their enterprises, keep their cattle, grow forests, do things we've never thought about before, and that's what they are for. Purposeful planning, that's what they are for. And then there are certainly places that are heritage countryside, and they're not just ours, they're the heritage of all of Europe. And there's different sets of issues taking place there, not necessarily meaning that things can't happen there, but what does happen there happens more carefully and sometimes happens more slowly. And as I say, I'm just passing that tool, that knife onto you that I've found very useful in cutting the Occam's razor for rural development of heritage countrysides and our working countrysides. And of the points within those two types of countrysides, the integration, I can't speak enough about the importance of doing it. As I said, my family down southwest Kerry, places where there's extraordinary poverty and extraordinary exclusion, and the importance of making sure that every single solitary euro and every single hour of public service money and time is expended to get the maximum impact for those people who need it most. And also in those areas where ageing is a big issue, rather than being in denial about the ageing, to work with the ageing, to work with, in some cases, population losses, and instead of going out every day to face defeat by seeing it continue to happen, to anticipate it and work with it and make for planned transitions in those areas.
Throughout the conference, there was a lot of talk around the planning and connection that Conor Skian mentioned in his talk. And we were told by several members in the Irish Rural Link, including CEO Seamus Boland, that this is a very important topic for them going forward.
Conor Skian again talked about planning. Irish Rural Link will be focusing a great deal on planning and how we plan our residential spaces in rural areas. Ironically, if you look at the Southern England example of rural, you now really have people converting barns and all sorts of buildings to be houses. I genuinely think, taking account of Conor Skehan's prediction that more and more people will come to live, those houses will not be too long derelict. I'm certain of that. I know of some houses already which have been used in very nice, tasty ways to return to habitable. So I don't think that is going to last very long. And I think even in 5 years, you're going to see a different trend there.
Another way to connect rural Ireland is with transport, something that Miriam McKenna, who works on the Rural Transport Programme, has strived to improve since 2007.
So in 2007, I actually went to IRL and I said, look, I need your help, because the rural transport was coming to an end and the funding, there was talk about the funding being pulled, and I had passengers, you know, complaining and saying, you can't have this end, you can't have this stopped. We did a big protest in Dublin, and fair enough, in the next couple of weeks we had what became the Rural Transport Programme. And then from the Rural Transport Programme in 2012 we moved to the National Transport Authority, and that's where we stand. But when the programme was coming to an end in 2007, we had annual funding and we never knew exactly how much money we were going to get. At least now, under the National Transport Authority, we know where the funding is being, and we know that in the next 5 years there are plans. Those plans are, I suppose, big plans, and there are an awful lot of small things to go in.
The farming industry is also a hot topic within the Irish Rural Link, with many of its members and board members within the farming community. I talked to one of the newer board members, Thomas Cooney, and asked him to explain why farming is such an important economical part of rural Ireland.
It's huge. There's 300,000 jobs, you know, like there's 135,000 farms. As we heard earlier on this morning, there's actually more farms now than there was 20 years ago. The farms, we're bucking the trend in Europe, you know, where farms are getting... are disappearing, but there's more farms here. Now, It's huge. Look, there would be no rural Ireland. Rural Ireland would be dead if agriculture wasn't there. We wouldn't have football teams. We wouldn't have schools open. Do you know all that sort of thing? Do you know the town, the villages? Do you know the local mechanics, the carpenters, the builders? Do you know there is a huge industry, a service industry around agriculture that is keeping going with. We've over 12 billion of exports there. You know, it's vitally important. It's part of who we are and what we are. You know, when we talk about selling our tourism and everything, like if we didn't have agriculture, a vibrant agriculture, we wouldn't have the 40 shades of green. We wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't have the scenery. It'd be a totally different scene and all that. So, like, we're so different to the rest of Europe. Like, we're an outdoor system. We're a sustainable model. And look, we probably have more to do in regards to sustainability. Nobody disagreeing with that. But farmers are making, and there has been huge strides made from 20 years ago. Like, there's around the same amount of cattle in the country as there was now in 1990. It did dip slightly for a couple of years, but it's probably back up around the 1990 levels, and like there has been a bit of a shift into dairy, and the stock numbers probably have increased in certain areas such as the southeast and declined in others, but by and large we're around the same. As and there always will be various challenges. There is challenges. The war in the Ukraine has posed challenges. That's the latest one, you know, so there's always going to be weather and price difficulties, but look, by and large I think we there will be a future, and Pat McDonough was very positive there this morning about the future for agriculture. So, yeah.
Within the Irish rural community, forestry and preserving the nature around us is also very important. Board member Dermot Levy touched upon some of the measures the Irish Rural Link want to work on within the forestry section.
There's the forestry section as well, and you know, I think that's very important as well, that would be developed, and I think there's whole new ideas coming on how better to grow trees so that they provide, you know, for building and all the other stuff. We're importing lots of timber, like, which we, you know, we should get to be self-sufficient. You know, that type of forestry came in mostly with the precursor to quilcha, like, you know, you plant a certain type of softwood trees, you know, because they had a quick growth. But now they're looking at much more variants of types of trees, you know, and it becomes a nearly continuous cover process. And I think that's where the future is.
As well as housing and connecting rural Ireland, there are also more personal and humanitarian subjects that need to be looked at too within the Irish Rural Link. This is Chair of Irish Rural Link and CEO of Longford Women's Link, Tara Farrell.
Well, one of the issues that Irish Rural Link included in their some of their recent pre-budget submissions was the issue, for example, of domestic violence. And people don't always consider that there are additional barriers for women and children living in rural areas that maybe are not considered. You have additional isolation. If you're in a violent situation, you are more likely to be isolated. You have less access to services. Irish Rural Link are obviously very strong on farm safety, but farm safety can take on a different turn when you're talking about a domestic violence situation. I live in rural Ireland myself. You know, we have this lovely, sometimes romantic view of this great community spirit, and that is there, you know, across our parishes and our towns. But if you are in a domestic violence situation, that can be very, very different, because the perpetrator, for example, is not going to be isolated if they're needed to help on the farm or to, you know, do the silage or the turf or whatever it is. So sometimes, you know, that very tight-knit community spirit, that Mehel approach almost, can work in opposite directions if you're in that situation. So, you know, we've been able to include those points in pre-budget submissions, which has been really helpful.
It was easy to see on the day that the health and well-being of the people in the Irish rural community is at the top of the Irish Rural Link's agenda. I talked to founding member Ivan Phillips about some of the issues that were important to him and what incentives have been put in place in the past or future that can improve those issues.
There is the issue of mental health, and that's a huge issue. In my own community in Donegal, in my area where I'm from, in the last 6 weeks we've lost 3 young men, you know, and that's a huge, huge issue. They've had it, and this champions, this community champions initiative that Irish Rural Link piloted during COVID has helped rural communities, has helped people living on their own. For example, there you are at home at night, and a famous GA person picks up the phone and rings you. You're living on your own. Could be Auntie Daly in Clare, or could be John O'Mahony in Mayo. It could be Parry Joyce or Joe Connolly in Galway. And that was done throughout the country. That was an initiative undertaken by Irish Rurling. I'm a lecturer at the Atlantic Technological University in Galway, and we survey our students every year, and I surveyed my class there a couple of weeks ago, and I asked them what was the number one issue that they had in their lives, and 75% of them said mental health. And then when we actually looked at the analysis that they did, 80% of the it was 80% of the guys who said that. And the concern that they have for their friends and their families as well, particularly in farming communities. Mental health's a huge issue in farming. Recently, I don't know if you're aware that some co-ops now are now advertising the Pieta House phone lines and the Samaritan phone lines on the sides of the milk lorries going to your farm. You know, that's been piloted by one of the co-ops. I think it might be Arevo. Unfortunately, it's a fact of life, but we have to try and deal with it as well. It's huge, and we need more counsellors at local level in rural Ireland as well, because there's research has shown if you live in a rural community like Achill, for example, and I worked in Achill for 8 years, the further you live away from a hospital, the least likely you are to use that services. So if you're a good bit away from your counsellor, for example, you're unlikely to go and see that person, or have the resources to go to see that person, or get a bus service to see that person, because the bus services aren't there. So there needs to be a lot of more joined-up thinking in relation to that.
In the second half of the conference, Dr. Maura Farrell, lecturer at NUI Galway, took the stand and talked about two other groups of the Irish rural community that should be at the forefront of discussions to solidify the future of rural Ireland.
When we talk about the future of rural areas, we have to, I suppose, think about what we have now. And we talk a lot about sustainability. And into the future in 30 years' time, if we have a sustainable rural Ireland, that's exactly what we want. But sustainability is built on society, the environment, and economics. Looking at society, demographic trends, we do actually have more people living in rural Ireland than across any other country in Europe. We've over 31% of Irish people are living in rural Ireland today. Let's look at two things into the future that we have to give serious consideration to, and that is our elderly in rural areas and our youth. We have the highest population of elderly people currently living in rural areas, and this is going to continue into the future. So into the future, how do we manage this? Where are the trends that we need to consider around our elderly in rural areas? And I suppose we really have to look at the increased need for services and facilities for older people, the care industry, the support of housing and living independent living industry. What about older farmers? Shane Conway is here with me today from NUI Galway, has done extensive work on older farmers in rural areas. Older farmers that are maybe looking to retire, not wanting to retire. What do we do? Where is this question in and around older farmers? We had a talk last week from a group in UCC on our Rural Voices series in NUI Galway, and they talked about the silver economy. So when you talk about older people in rural areas, you can also see the economic value of older people in rural areas. And that's something into the future that we should consider as well. On the other flip side, I suppose, of older people in rural areas, you have youth and young people. And at the moment, we're involved in a Horizon 2020 ruralisation project that has 18 countries working across Europe in relation to this idea of ruralisation. And one of the work packages that we were working on was in relation to youth. And we did a study in relation to the dream futures. What are the dream futures of our young people living in rural areas? And we carried out 2,000 surveys in 10 different EU countries right across Europe, including here in Ireland. And we looked to about 18 and 35-year-olds, and we asked them questions in and around their livelihood recipes. We asked them about their accommodation. We asked them about their lifestyle. How do they intend to live? Where do they intend to live? And how do they intend to earn a living into the future? And I suppose some of the results that we came up with were quite interesting in the sense that quite a lot of these young people wanted to stay in rural areas, but they also wanted to stay within a capacity or within a proximity to, I suppose, an urban centre.
As it comes to the end of the conference, and after learning so much from the speakers and board members, it was also significant to get some of the opinions from people that didn't speak during the conference, but have played an important role in the Irish Rural Link, and indeed in the conference itself. John Joe Dunn is one of the original members of the committee and had this to say about the importance of the Irish Rural Link.
I spent 16 years on the committee originally and then the board, and they were very enjoyable, and I worked with great people and learned a lot from them. And well, I think that in the family of organisations it is an important player. I think you'll always have trade unions, and you'll have IBEC, and you'll have farming organisations, and you'll have sporting and social organisations and ICAs and you know, all these organisations. But I think this is doing a more broad sweep of the needs of people, and maybe some of the forgotten needs at times that slip through the net because no one else is dealing with them. I don't think we should be trying to replicate, or IRL should be trying to replicate what someone else is doing or doing well or doing properly. I think we should be trying to look for niches, and but also trying to bring a cross-sectoral approach.
The final words from the conference will come from Brendan Mullery, the project officer from the Irish Rural Link, who was tasked in planning the conference. We wanted to find out why conferences like these are important and what they wanted to achieve with the day.
We kind of wanted to do something that looked to where we had come from, and Ireland was very, very different in 1991, and where we're possibly going to go in the next 30 years. Because we kind of came to the conclusion that the last 30 years has brought more change to Irish Rural Link than nearly any 30-year period going back to the mid-19th century. So I suppose on a day-to-day basis, change just creeps up quietly. But if you look at the changed economy, the changed way of living in rural Ireland, the changed jobs, the changed sense of optimism, I suppose, that's here now compared to 30 years ago. Because 30 years ago, it was a disadvantaged place where the future for a lot of people looked impossible. So people, if they wanted to live in Ireland, many people would have been moving to the cities and or abroad at that time. So since then, we've kind of gone on a big journey, and we really just wanted to capture that today and really kind of go, well, if this is where we've come from, where could we possibly go in the next 30 years? And where that might be, we do think, and there is a sense of optimism in the room, that everybody that wants to will be able to work from home or, you know, do a hybrid on their job so that they can actually live in the countryside. The rural broadband challenge, while now 38% of houses still aren't connected, we won't be saying that in 3 or 4 years. So, like, it's a time of optimism, I suppose. It'll bring challenges we haven't even considered, like COVID and what might possibly come, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now. But generally, yeah, it's just a different story to what it was 30 years ago. And we actually have an eye to the future. So we're going to finish today's conference inviting people to our 60th anniversary in 2051, when we look forward to, the years up to 2111. So, you know, somebody in this room will be attending that conference. And just, you know, the challenge of the future really is, it's a fascinating time to be living in rural Ireland, and it's a time full of hope, and I'd like to think progress. Full of challenges, but we're, I think, more equipped to tackle them than we might have been in the past. So, we're delighted with the day. Today we have a good crowd. We've really, everybody in the room there, we're describing them as rural change makers, visionaries, or trailblazers. And really, the people speaking on the stage, they're all of those things.
Today's programme was put together in celebration of 30 years of the Irish Rural Link, highlighting some of the incredible initiatives they have been a part of, or even the catalyst for, and also for the work they are currently putting in to make our future in rural Ireland full of rich community opportunities, connection, renovation and optimism. I've been Sarah Cassilly. Thanks for listening.